From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Peña with your state and local news update. Both of Alaska's U.S. senators joined Democrats in voting to confirm Deb Haaland as Interior Secretary today. The vote was 51 to 40. Haaland is the first Native American cabinet secretary. She has tremendous support among Alaska Natives and across Indian country. Alaska Congressman Don Young worked with Haaland on the House Resources Committee and endorsed her confirmation. But members of Congress from other oil states opposed Haaland, pointing out that she has rallied against pipeline construction and resource extraction on federal land. Senator Lisa Murkowski says Haaland will hear from her on Alaska issues frequently.
I wish that I could say, yes, I've got every degree of confidence. I don't, so my obligation is to make sure that I am on top of this all the time.
Murkowski says she impressed on Haaland during their meetings that she will have to embrace all parts of the job of leading the Interior Department.
Which is not only the American Indian, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiian portfolio, it is management of all of our nation's public lands, our resources. And so there is a significant responsibility that comes with this position. And my hope is that she's able to rise to that.
Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan were among only four Republican senators to support Haaland. The others are Susan Collins of Maine and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And in a story about the Ambler Road project that we ran on Thursday, we stated that the Red Dog Mine is a zinc and cobalt mine. It is, in fact, a zinc and lead mine. The first Alaska Native woman to serve as lieutenant governor will lead a key tribal health organization in the state. KNBA's Trip Krause talks with Valerie Davidson about her new role as interim president of ANTHC.
Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium announced in a news release that Valerie Nugagaluk-Davidson will serve as interim president.
You know, it is such a humbling honor to be asked by the board to be able to step into this role. You know, my first priority is really going to be listening to what our employees have to say about their experience here and what it is that they need to be successful in the work that we do.
Davidson will work with the board of directors to lead the consortium and work toward its priorities of improving the quality of lives for Alaska Natives. She says it's an opportunity to address the unmet healthcare needs in the state.
You know, I'm a village girl, and one thing we do is when there's work to get done, we just roll up our kasbuk sleeves and we get to work. One thing I've learned is that people will do the most amazing things under the most impossible of conditions, as long as they have the right reasons. And children and families and communities are always the right reasons. And that's where we are today.
ANTHC is a nonprofit tribal health organization that provides comprehensive medical services to more than 180,000 Alaska Native and Native American people through numerous programs, including the Alaska Native Medical Center. ANTHC co-manages the medical center with South Central Foundation. Davidson takes over the role after the previous president resigned in February. It also marks 1 year since the COVID-19 pandemic began. Davidson says that tribal health organizations are largely credited with leading the distribution of vaccines to Alaska Natives, but also include others who may not benefit from the tribal health care.
I think we're seeing firsthand how a really robust tribal health system helps all Alaskans. We were among the first to do the vaccines in the country. And what that tells me is that when our entire state has benefited, and if we can do that well during a pandemic, imagine what we can do when we're not in the middle of a pandemic.
Davidson will take a leave of absence from her role as president of Alaska Pacific University to take on the ANTHC role. According to Davidson, APU Provost Hilton Halleck will serve as acting president of the school in that time. In Anchorage, I'm Trip Krause.
In other news, the Dunleavy administration's plan to replace six state DMVs with an unnamed private vendors is facing pushback from lawmakers across the political spectrum. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, there's concern that rural residents would have to pay higher fees, drive hundreds of miles, or even take a ferry or plane to take driver's tests or register vehicles.
The Dunleavy administration says privatizing DMV services in a half dozen communities could save the state around $500,000. And Division of Motor Vehicles Director Jeffrey Schmitz told House lawmakers that all but one of the six offices slated for closure has served less than 1% of Alaska's population.
These were other factors that were considered in selecting these locations for this proposal, is the few transactions that those locations actually process.
The plan by the Department of Administration is to sign up private vendors to offer DMV services in the communities of Haines, Homer, Valdez, Eagle River, Delta Junction, and Tok. They would be allowed to levy service fees on top of what the state already charges that officials admit could end up doubling the cost of driver's license renewals and other routine services. But even urban lawmakers seized on this as an unfair cost shifting onto rural Alaskans. Anchorage Democrat Garen Tarr says smaller communities already have a higher cost of living. They shouldn't be asked to pay more to access state services.
I just feel uncomfortable because, to me, what I'm supposed to take away from this is sort of like, if fewer people live in a community, they're somehow less important Alaskans or don't deserve the same level of service.
That was echoed by Sutton Republican George Rauscher, whose district covers a swath of interior Alaska, mostly north of the Glenn Highway.
I just don't know whether we're thinking this out all the way through. Rural areas are going to take the hurt more than non-rural areas, and that's a fact.
All of the DMVs targeted for closure are on Alaska's road system, except for Haines. Its highway runs through Canada, which has severely restricted travel across its borders throughout the coronavirus pandemic. Roy Getchell, the Haines school superintendent, told Coast Alaska that for high schoolers, losing the DMV would be a major blow.
You know, for a student that needs to take a driver's exam, it would mean, you know, trying to find a ferry, and you know what a struggle that has been, and take that and get an exam over in Juneau and then come back on the ferry. It would be days at a time at pretty serious expense, you know, for their family.
The plan has also been panned by state Republicans who are allied closely with Governor Dunleavy. Here's Kenai Republican Ben Carpenter.
Those in the rural communities who may not have another option to go pay for a wasted time at the DMV are now going to pick up a bigger burden than those in urban areas. And if that's the only option we've got, I'm not sure that that's a good option for people living in rural communities.
Under questioning by committee members, Department of Administration Commissioner Kelly Chewbacca, who oversees the DMV, assured lawmakers that the administration wouldn't close the six DMV offices if lawmakers reject the idea.
If we were going to close these anyway, we wouldn't have put them forward as a budget proposal. We would have just done that.
But lawmakers aren't taking her at her word.
Her statements are inconsistent. We need to keep the DMVs open.
That's Anchorage Democrat Zach Fields. He told Coast Alaska that lawmakers can't directly dictate how the executive runs an agency.
But what you can do is prohibit the Department of Administration from closing DMVs in communities with 900 people or more, which would have the effect of protecting all our existing DMVs.
He says he'll be introducing a House bill that keeps DMVs open across rural Alaska. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Metlakatla Indian Community is appealing a federal judge's dismissal of a fishing rights case against Governor Mike Dunleavy and his administration. Lawyers for the tribe filed the appeal in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on Thursday. Lawyers argue that Metlakatla tribal members shouldn't need state permits to fish in waters within a day's travel of the community at the southern tip of the Southeast Panhandle. When Congress created the Annette Islands Reserve in 1891 as the tribe's permanent self-sustaining home, Metlakatla's attorneys say lawmakers implicitly granted tribal members the right to fish in nearby waters, even outside the reserve's boundaries. The tribe asked the court to stop the state from enforcing commercial fishing regulations on tribal members. But U.S. District Court Judge John Sedgwick sided with attorneys for the state, who argued that Congress did not intend to grant the tribe off-reservation fishing rights. Sedgwick cited the language of the 1891 law and congressional debate surrounding the measure. Sedgwick also pointed to the tribe's unique history. Metlakatla was founded in 1887 when around 800 Tsimshian people fled their previous home in Canada. The longtime federal judge contrasted that with the circumstances of many lower 48 tribes who are forcefully relocated or negotiated treaties to relinquish land claims. For more on this story, go to ktoo.org. This is KTOO News.